The Gary Knoll Show, weekdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program, broadcasting live and video streaming live from our studios. If you'd like to watch the program, you can go to GaryKnoll.com. Today, because of an enormous amount of calls and emails following yesterday's program, those of you who were listening over the internet heard one program. Those of you who are listening on our land-based station are hearing a different one, because once in a while we have to do some fundraising for the non-commercial program, and since I'm the only one on that 24/7 cycle who does it, we play a different program. Well, people didn't know any of this material, and they asked for more. So I'm inviting James Otto, a civil rights attorney, to come on to give you some facts and figures if you did not hear yesterday's program and add on to it. I asked for some corroborating evidence. Oh, you will hear some evidence that will just knock your socks off. Want to know what goes on in those law offices when people are meeting with clients, clients meaning major corporations? We have a tape. I'm sure they're not happy we have this tape, but we do. I'm going to play it for you. So they can say anything they want to the media and deny culpability. But they can't get out of the fact that we got them on tape. And this is absolutely what we're going to do. I'll save the details for a moment. Then our regular guest today will be Professor Fred Wilcox. No one's talking about this, but they should be. As you know, there is a move now to virtually capture all of our rights and freedoms when it comes to our health, as well as other civil liberties. For example, the FDA has, through President Obama, unfortunately, appointed Michael Taylor to head all food safety. Michael Taylor's the former top lawyer at Monsanto. Had him go over to the FDA. At the FDA, he's the one who streamlined this genetic engineering of our seeds. This really involves our health, because would you buy genetically modified frankenfoods if you knew that it was altered at the gene level, where they were using pig genes and all other types of bacteria and genes? I don't think so. I think most of you would reason, I want certified, organic, wherever possible, locally grown, because I want healthy, nutritious food. Well, based upon where it's going, you won't have that choice. So we're educating the public about, first, the dangers of genetically engineered food, the importance of organic food, the importance of local sustainable agriculture, and also the politics of the FDA. You have to look at the whole picture. The same is true with supplements. Now, there's a major move to, in effect, destroy all supplements in the United States. For all intents and purposes, pre-1997, you wouldn't be able to have 99% of the supplements you have now. We're fighting it. I'm one of the plaintiffs in a lawsuit against the FDA on this very issue as we speak. So your freedoms of choice are being eroded. Just when you thought we'd cross that barrier, now we're right back where we started, because ALEC, the group of corporations that have been working quietly to influence state legislation and federal legislation, feel so empowered by how easy it was to buy the White House, to buy the Congress, to buy the media, to buy the top former lobbyists and politicians. They bought everybody. And so therefore, they get whatever they want with no repercussions. I mean, have we seen anyone brought to court for manipulating the price of oil from $47 to $147 a barrel? We know who it was. It was Citicorp. No. Anyone, any of the top CEOs of the Wall Street banks that have lied to the American public? No. So no matter what they do, they get away with it. Anyone held accountable for the wars they got lied us into because of their own political and economic agenda? No. So when you can get away with everything they've gotten away with, they don't have to have their little Bilderberg meetings in secret. They can do anything they want because they've gained the system. Kudos to them. I mean, brilliant strategy. But those of us, the independents, the progressives, we're exposing them. Today, I will do a 10-minute program that will expose just one piece of this puzzle, but a very important piece. And you'll see what happens from that. But now, Professor Wilcox is going to expose how the very people that poisoned all of Vietnam with Agent Orange and that deadly legacy on American soldiers who came back or were sick and the VA refused to acknowledge. But Paul Rudishan and myself, I did 122 programs with Paul and Agent Orange veterans, finally won, but they never admitted guilt. All they admitted was, well, they'll give 3.5 million vets a small amount of money, and then it all goes away. What's back? Now they want to put Agent Orange and the active ingredient of Agent Orange back into our food, 2,4-D dioxin. They're making resistant corn with this. Dow Chemical. Yep. So we're going to expose this. We're going to let you be informed on this, because if we're not informing it, then people are going to be eating dioxin-contaminated corn. It's already gotten right through the USDA. That should surprise no one. Anything that any major corporation wants to get through any governmental agency today, it will, because they own the top policy-making, political appointed positions in government. Then the UK is doing something neat. How about this? You know, in the United States, some people got pepper sprayed. And I think all of us were rightly concerned and offended. UK's learned some lessons. Why pepper spray a protester when you can nerve gas them? Think I'm guessing? Think I'm making it up? Not at all. I'll be quoting how a neuroscience research team has announced that in the UK they're planning on implementing nerve gas and other chemical agents for domestic law enforcement. All right, so that'll put you down. That'll put you in the hospital. And that could put you in the grave, but no problem there, because it doesn't seem like the British government is any better than our government. And also, news for all of you who are journalists in the United States, like it or not, through a new Department of Homeland Security Media Monitoring Initiative. Never heard of it? You should, because, quote, they are gathering every single piece of, quote, personally identifiable information on you or any writers in the United States. If you're an anchor, news broadcaster, on-scene reporter, on-camera, off-camera, internet, blogger, it doesn't matter. They are going to go after all the information. Why are they doing this? Why aren't you protesting? Oh, I forgot. You're part of the problem. You don't seem to think that there is fascism or becoming a police state's a big deal. What's the big deal? So someone is, you know, involved in looking into our lives, looking at everything we've written, look at everything that is sent, that we send, who gets it, what's it for, and we cannot ask them. They're unaccountable, and they can keep it secret until they decide whether or not we represent to them some threat. What about those who tell the truth that could embarrass a corporation? Then you're a threat. What about a think tank that is sponsored by corporations? It's nothing more than a PR arm, an intellectual PR arm, but still a PR arm for propagandizing for special interest. Well, you expose that, you're a threat. What about if you're an environmentalist? What if you believe in human rights? What if you're a church activist? Huh? You're a threat. So why isn't anyone talking about this? Why isn't the official left and the official right refuse to acknowledge this? We have the actual documents. We will. And did you know that 60 Minutes really made a mistake? They recently reported on how some great things are happening in Lower Manhattan, There's a $150 million computer center equipped with artificial intelligence to integrate and analyze the daily habits of what are, for the most part, law-abiding citizens, according to Pam Martins and Counterpunch. And so 60 Minutes talked with Raymond Kelly, our New York City Police Commissioner, about this. What did they leave out? What part of the story did 60 Minutes intentionally not show you? That it's all run by Wall Street firms? That in that same center, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, Bank of America are the ones who are actually doing the spying, analyzing every single person with zooms, pans, close-ups, voice recognition, everything? Well, hold on a second. They can't do that. That's against the law. That breaks federal and state laws. Yeah, that's right. But they're doing it. So now we have the 1% spying with the NYPD on the 99%, and the 99% chipped in $150 million to make sure it's done right. So you're being spied on by Goldman Sachs because they're afraid of you. So they want to collect intelligence information on you. It's illegal. It is a crime. The people should be brought to justice. But instead of our attorney general and the other corporatists, they're actually applauding them on doing this. When I told you for the next year, every week, I'm going to bring you more information, documented, fully referenced, to show you how your rights are being eroded so that you at least can choose to be aware or not. But for those of us who are concerned, I'm going to keep on this. Before I go to my health and nutrition information, let's follow up with yesterday's program. My guest yesterday was James Otto, O-T-T-O. We're trying to get him on. He's going to call us right back. When he calls us right back, I'll hold the audio piece that I have. No, I'm not going to hold the audio piece I have. Play the segment from what a lawyer for a major law firm is sharing with corporate clients.
Because our goal here, of course, is to meet the requirements, number one, but also do so as inexpensively as possible, keeping in mind our goal. And our goal is clearly not to find a qualified and interested U.S. worker. And, you know, that, in a sense, that sounds funny, but it's what we're trying to do here.
So we're trying not to find a qualified American. Well, then who are they trying to find? What they're doing, without you being aware of it, is that the major corporations, with first the Clinton administration and then Bush and then Obama, they're bringing special visa, what's called an H-1B-1 visa, meaning a person who has a college degree, generally an advanced degree, in. Then the American worker who's making a living wage and has worked hard at an education to become a person who is important to a company, that person then teaches the foreign visa worker their job and all the things they have to know. Then that American's fired. And then they go from making a good living with their education to unemployment and stacking boxes at Walmart. That's what's happening. I really want to shout out to Keith Olbermann, because if he consistently continues to deny the truth about the unemployment figures, he must be held accountable for it. And everyone else in the corporate left has to be held accountable. I'm going to go over these figures with my guest to show you that we didn't gain 272,000 jobs last month. It was 272,000 less that were lost from a year ago when you averaged them in, from 1,900,000 lost to 1,700,000 lost, 207,000. That's so you simply lost less jobs instead of gaining them. Man, what political capital they make out of that. But then the idea that why isn't anyone talking about how many Americans have lost their jobs to people who were brought in on special visas by the corporate elites with the full knowledge and support of our Secretary of State, I have the actual quotes, and our president, everyone else. The number is mind-boggling. 8.2 million. You heard me right. 8.2 million Americans lost their jobs and were taken over by visa jobs. I'm not talking about migrant workers coming across the border and working wherever they can, generally in poor, low-paying and exploitive positions where they're harmed in bean fields. I'm talking about high-end jobs, the very jobs that we prided ourselves that Americans would go to school, get their degrees, advanced degrees, go in and be an important part of the future of a company, and those jobs are being decimated right under everyone's noses. Everyone knows about it. Not a person's talking about it on any of the talk shows. We are. And my guest is going to give us this information in detail. He's going to call us back shortly. But I will read you something. Quote, this is from my guest. The first is a clip captured a law firm discussing its works, that's what you just heard, with clients to make sure they do not have to hire an American worker in order to secure a green card for one of their clients' foreign employees. The second is a list of quotes from various politicians regarding H-1B-1 visa and its impact or lack of impact on U.S. workers. Take note that Pat Buchanan's position at least was honest. I worked in the defense industry for years until I grew tired of being a prostitute for empire and helping to manufacture devices that had no value except as instruments of death. I recall back in the 1990s, Bill Clinton was a big supporter of the H-1B-1 process because, quote, he was receiving huge donations from Silicon Valley and extremely wealthy Indian businessmen who wanted to move part of their enterprises to the Bay Area and buy into the federal government contractor feed bag. End quote. In my day, I even witnessed companies working with government officials to post non-citizens in jobs that involved classified information and materials. The process became rampant as the Department of Defense and other federal agencies were slowly privatized from the inside out. Specifically, a contractor would secure a service agreement whereby it would replace federal government staff with its own employees, normally 100% of the time. Those contractor employees would have to be citizens. However, if some of the work was completed off-site, then wink, wink, nod, nod, the contractor would hire a non-U.S. citizen to do the work at its premises while charging the federal government triple of what it cost to hire the original federal American worker. I think the matter is really tragic when you consider the number of Americans who have pursued high-tech degrees at enormous expense and huge indebtedness. Unfortunately, the foreign workers, whether low-skilled or high-skilled, are only trying to survive themselves and are not concerned about American workers they bump out of a job. Of course, the politicians and the oligarchs simply want the peasants to fight each other and not the boneheaded policies that only help a very small number of people. And that's my two cents, end quote. That's some of what my guest had to say. My guest is now Then I'll go to health and nutrition. I'll then play a segment that I think is very important and ask you to call in and share your points of view on. Then we'll go to our second guest about why our food supply is so dangerous and why the genetic engineered and petrochemical companies virtually control food policy in the United States. They control everything, but they do so not to your betterment, to theirs. Would you want to eat something that had 2,4-D dioxin, the same ingredients in Agent Orange? I wouldn't. They're going to insist upon it. Now, let me just share this with you. This is health and nutrition. I'm a big believer in preventing problems, whether they're social or any other. And I was just told he's currently with a judge. And when he gets out, if time permits, we'll have him on, either beginning or middle or end of the program. This is important. 30% of all cancers can be prevented with lifestyle change, says the World Health Organization. I believe that it's closer to 80%. But we'll even take that, because if 30% of all cancers were prevented, we could be saving hundreds of thousands of lives per year. Now, here's what I would suggest in order to prevent cancers. I know that if we gave up coffee, caffeinated beverages, processed sugar, meat, and refined carbohydrate, just that, we would eliminate 80% of what causes inflammation in the body, and it's the inflammation that leads to DNA that's damaged, and that DNA that's damaged ends up causing the cancer. Then if on top of what you eliminate, you include things such as green tea, curcumin with biopurine or black pepper, cayenne pepper, vitamin C, vitamin E with tocotrienols, then you're not only preventing cancer, but you're actually helping boost the body's immune system and natural killer cell activity. That's the part of the body's immune system that traps and kills cancer cells. If you know someone who is afflicted with colon rectal cancer, here's good advice. This is from the Journal of Oncology. Calcium and magnesium reduces the drug side effects substantially. So that will help patients, even if they're going on an orthodox therapy. So calcium and magnesium comes from a peer-reviewed journal, major study, University of Colorado Cancer Center. So it's another way of helping people, even with orthodox therapy. Separately, zinc could control the breast cancer treatment. And this is from Cardiff University, and it's King's College London. And here's what it is, and it's published in Science Signaling. It says, the body's control mechanisms for delivering zinc to cells could be improving treatment for some types of aggressive breast cancer. Now, anyone in this audience knows that zinc has long been known to play a vital role in human health. You don't want too much, you don't want too little, but you want enough to cause the cancer not to spread. So zinc levels in cells are controlled by protein molecules called zinc transporters, and these move zinc in and out of the cell to ensure correct levels are maintained. But now scientists have not understood, until now, I should say, how the transporters release the zinc, but they've just discovered that. So the good news is that if you're taking an adequate amount of zinc, I'm suggesting between 20 and 50 milligrams a day, you could be helping stop a lot of the breast cancer. And finally, make sure that you're getting some chocolate each day. Why? Here's the latest, and this is from Science and Technology Institute in Food and Nutrition. It says a daily cup of cocoa, that's chocolate, reduces the risk of developing bowel cancer. Researchers tested what cocoa does in this experiment and found that it prevents the tumor-causing chemicals that lead to bowel cancer. So get some of the chocolate into your body, maybe 2 ounces a day. You don't have to have a lot. And don't get it with the milk and don't get it with sugar. Just get healthy chocolate. All right? That's our health and nutrition. We're going to wait for our guest. But here's a piece for our issues of the day. This is a part of what I'm doing. I'm trying to bring you qualified information that shows that without people being aware of it, the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security Act, the lack of habeas corpus, the excessive rights of the military or the police to spy on us, that even if you've never done anything wrong and never will do anything wrong, you shouldn't want this. This is not a part of what a healthy democracy should be about. And that's what we become. It is my belief that we should be holding those who've committed crimes against humanity accountable. But the media has been extremely reluctant to make them responsible. Here are some notable individuals, scholars, who are speaking out about this. Listen to this, please.
5 hours after American Airlines Flight 77 struck the Pentagon, and without any evidence linking Saddam Hussein to the attacks of 9/11, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld was already ordering his aides to draw up plans for striking Iraq. The notes quote Rumsfeld as saying he wanted best info fast, judge whether good enough, hit SH, meaning Saddam Hussein. go massive, Rumsfeld continued in the notes. Sweep it all up, things related and not. Soon after September 11th, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld set up a small intelligence office in the Pentagon, the Office of Special Plans, to create the rationales for the already planned attack on Iraq, to convince people that Saddam Hussein possessed weapons of mass destruction, and that he was linked to Al-Qaeda and 9/11. Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski worked in the Pentagon's Near East and South Asia office. She witnessed how the Office of Special Plans issued talking points about Iraq for senior government officials, allegedly based on intelligence.
The information in there, drawn from fact, you could find bits and pieces of fact throughout, but framed, articulated, crafted to convince someone of what? Well, of things that weren't true. 911, Al-Qaeda related to Saddam Hussein, possibly some involvement there.
The liberation of Iraq is a crucial advance in the campaign against terror. We've removed an ally of Al-Qaeda.
The very things that a year later President Bush himself denies and feigns his surprise. I don't know why everybody thinks that.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
Well, I worked in a place where they concentrated on preparing this storyline and selling it to everyone that they could possibly sell it to.
It wasn't a failure of intelligence. It was the manipulation of intelligence to achieve a political goal. They were disciplined. They stayed on message. They marshaled all of their forces in this relentless public relations campaign to convince the American people that there was a threat from Iraq.
It's day four of the Bush team's full court press, giving speech after speech after speech and issuing reports.
The United States knows that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Any country on the face of the earth with an active intelligence program knows that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction.
There is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us.
The choice is his. And if he does not disarm, the United States of America will lead a coalition and disarm him in the name of peace.
Out of the president's mouth, vice president's mouth, the same things that were being given to us to put into our superiors, our senior civilian leadership's mouths, these things were not based on intelligence that we saw, that everyone saw. They were based on a very selective reading of the intelligence and then a creative packaging such that you could push through these two big points that the president and the vice president and the whole neoconservative community used to justify this preemptive war on Iraq.
Less than a teaspoonful of dry anthrax in an envelope shut down the United States Senate in the fall of 2001.
Their policy depends on deception and secrecy, like every imperial policy in history. Even dictatorships have taken great efforts always to disguise what they're doing and why they're doing it to their own people.
This was never about weapons. This has always been about getting Saddam Hussein, and even in the most recent spin-up of this whole weapons issue, the Bush administration knew that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and yet they continued to use the inspection process as a vehicle to achieve the ultimate goal and objective of regime change.
These guys should be brought up in charges. There should be an investigation about whether these guys should be allowed to serve our country anymore. Because to me, it's criminal to say we're going to send our troops to war based on falsified intelligence, based on puffed up, exaggerated details.
So successful was the propaganda campaign that by 2003, polls were showing that the vast majority of Americans believed the unfounded claims that Saddam Hussein was linked to 9/11 and that he possessed stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction. Beliefs that allowed the administration to frame an invasion of Iraq as a non-aggressive, justified act of self-defense under international law, rather than an offensive action designed to extend U.S. empire.
Contrary to the lies told to the American people, Iraq had absolutely no connections with 9/11. Al-Qaeda was despised by the regime in Iraq, which was a secular regime, not interested in religion as such. But they still wanted to go for it. And so they delayed it. They went into Afghanistan first, and then they decided to go for Iraq. Now, why did they decide to go for Iraq? That's the interesting question.
Where are Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction?
Former Chief Weapons Inspector David Kaye said last week, quote, "We were all wrong about Saddam's WMD."
By now, the world knows there was a massive intelligence failure in the war on Iraq. President Bush and other countries...
The failure to find Saddam Hussein's alleged weapons of mass destruction has raised serious questions about the legitimacy and legality of the ongoing war in Iraq. But as both American and Iraqi casualties escalate, and as the conflict becomes more chaotic and deadly by the day, debate within the United States continues to focus narrowly on whether American intelligence agencies provided accurate enough information to justify going to war. In the process, a larger question has been all but ignored. If the war was not about weapons of mass destruction, what is it really about? Pursuing this question forces us to consider a different story.
It is a story that begins as the Cold War ends. A story about a group of self-identified radical conservatives at the right-wing extreme of the Republican Party. A group of intellectuals and policymakers who saw the fall of the Soviet Union and communism not as an opportunity to scale back America's Cold War military machine, but as an opportunity to build up its size and scale, to use military force more aggressively and unilaterally, to construct a new, unchallenged American empire.
Repeat after me. I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly...
When George W. Bush took office in 2000, he brought with him some of the most conservative foreign policy voices in the Republican Party. Chief among them were Vice President Dick Cheney, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, and Deputy Secretary for Defense Paul Wolfowitz, all of whom had served together previously in the administrations of Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. Paul Wolfowitz, in particular, had long been recognized as the intellectual force behind a radical neoconservative fringe of the Republican Party. For years, Wolfowitz had been advancing the idea that the United States should reconsider its commitments to international treaties, international law, and multilateral organizations such as the United Nations. The radical plan for American military domination first surfaced during the administration of George H.W. Bush. In 1992, Paul Wolfowitz, working in the Department of Defense, was asked to write the first draft of a new national security strategy, a document entitled The Defense Planning Guidance. The most controversial elements of what would later come to be known as the Wolfowitz Doctrine were that the United States should dramatically increase defense spending, that it should be willing to take preemptive military action, and that it should be willing to use military force unilaterally, with or without allies. This new reliance on military force was necessary, according to Wolfowitz, to prevent the emergence of any future or potential rivals to American power, and to secure access to vital resources, especially Persian Gulf oil. Out of power during the Clinton presidency, Wolfowitz and his colleagues affiliated themselves with a number of influential conservative think tanks. In 2000, they would craft yet another proposed national security strategy, this one published by a right-wing think tank calling itself the Project for the New American Century. At its core, the document revived the Wolfowitz Doctrine. It called on the United States to increase the military budget by up to $100 billion, to deny other nations the use of outer space, and to adopt a more aggressive and unilateral foreign policy that would allow the United States to act offensively and preemptively in the world. The elimination of states like Iraq figured prominently in this grand vision.
They were coming out against the policy of every American president, from Nixon to Clinton to even George Bush in his first year. They wanted to change that.
But even these hardline conservatives knew that the Wolfowitz Doctrine was likely too radical to win the support of the foreign policy establishment, their own Republican Party, and the American people. In their defining document, written in September of 2000, a full year before 9/11, they acknowledged that the process of transformation, even if it brings revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one. Absent, in their own chilling words, some catastrophic and catalyzing event, like a new Pearl Harbor. 1 year later, that event would arrive.
And that's just a part of Enough Information documentary aired on the BBC. You heard Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kowalski, Robert Jensen, Professor of Journalism, University of Texas, Daniel Ellsberg, Scott Ritter, former UN Weapons Inspector, William Hartung, Senior Fellow at the World Policy Institute, Tariq Ali, author of Clash of Fundamentalisms, and Emmanuel Waterstein, Department of Sociology, Yale University. Now you start to see that you don't have to have a lot of people to cause serious problems. You just have to have those who are in policymaking positions. It didn't take a million people on Wall Street to get rid of the Glass-Steagall Act, in which case then all of the House of Cards came tumbling down, and $13 trillion was lost in people's equity in their homes and in their savings and 401ks. It just took a handful. That's all it took. Powerful people working together, Democrats and Republicans, corporatists working together, all behind the scenes, all in a lot of control of the American media. Remember, the American media was never critical going into these conflicts, only afterwards, but never asking, did they manufacture their own intelligence? Because if they say, well, we're innocent, we just used the intelligence we had, that's different than saying, did you manufacture your own intelligence? And the answer is yes, they did. And that's different. That's a conspiracy. Why? As you heard, they wanted oil. And they thought it would be just a cakewalk. Isn't that what he said, the exact words? Cakewalk. And it won't cost much. And this whole war will not cost us anything because we'll get the money from Iraq. Well, it's cost us between $3 to $5 trillion, 5,000 American casualties in Iraq alone, 44,000 injured, but Ralph Nader said it's closer to 100,000. And think of all the hundreds of thousands now sick with Gulf War syndrome or post-traumatic stress disorder. And look what it's done to us, bankrupted a country so that the corporate elite and their private contractors can gain from it. Your thoughts, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall. This is our talkback, part of our program, your chance to share your points of view. Now, I'm going to assume that our first guest is still with the judge and won't be out. He's an attorney practicing, James Otto. Let me just highlight quickly as we get our other guest on to talk about dioxin, Agent Orange, in our food through the Dow Chemical and others, that here was the point of yesterday's program, that 8.2 million jobs have been lost specifically and exclusively because of well-educated visas being given, well-educated people being given the H-1B program visas. Now, the H-1B visa program is touted by our government officials, most notably Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, as being good. They're not good. Its intent is this. Behind this is ALEC. Behind this are the major corporations saying, if we can't move our factories offshore, if we have to keep a particular corporation in America, let's get rid of all the people that we have to pay a lot of money to, and retirement to, and pensions, and everything else to. And sure enough, these people are willing to work for one-third or less without all the guarantees, without unions. So it's a great way for corporate America to make more profit and at the same time bring in foreign workers, skilled, educated, to take the place of skilled, educated Americans. And a lot of the Americans they're taking the place of still have student debt, have gone to great schools, done great work, and now they're out of a job with compounding interest on their debt. This is a major scandal. This is not being talked about. It should be. This is a perversion in America because it undermines the American ethic that we're looking first and foremost to help Americans get their jobs back. We are not. We're getting rid of the jobs as we're getting rid of 44,000 corporations and factories. In the last 10 years, we've gotten rid of 8.2 2 million American jobs and brought in 1 to 2 million visa jobs per year. Per year. This is all new information. And when my guest is available, we'll go into this in greater depth. Just to finish up on this, let's see how long it takes from the Royal Society, quote, the Royal Society scientists are talking about incapacitating chemical agents. This is from The Independent, quote, leading neuroscientists believe that the UK government may be out to sanction the development of nerve agents for British police that would be banned in warfare under an international treaty on chemical weapons, but could be used against any demonstration. Let's see how long it takes America's Homeland Security and its police department to say, well, we've only got pepper spray. And that's not enough against, you know, a paisley-wearing hippie. You know, we need nerve gas, right? Flamethrowers, they're a danger to us because, whoa, you know, we're all clad out in, you know, super muscle, you know, Superman outfits, the SWAT teams. So watch how long it takes to get nerve gas for crowd control in the United States. Now that they'll justify it, oh, it's over there in England. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm Gary Knoll in the studio. My guest, second guest is on hold, Professor Fred Cox. But let's go to Valerie, one of our executive producers. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Gary. I just wanted to let people know that we're working on a new documentary here on the FDA, The Tyranny of Power, and we're looking for people who have had adverse reactions or know anyone who have had any adverse reactions to pharmaceutical drugs, is we need some people in the documentary, real people, to tell real stories. So if you're out there, please give me a call, Valerie, and the number is 646-926-5441. It's really important that you participate because we need you to make this a real story and a real documentary. Again, the number is 646-926-5441. And I just want to congratulate Gary that we received an email this week that we have two of our documentaries, Knocking on the Devil's Door and Death by Medicine, that have been accepted into the Toronto International Film and Video Film Festival. And that's a great honor to have both documentaries in this festival, very prestigious festival. And we're very excited about that. We're getting our press kit out to them.
Good. Well, Toronto is one of the big ten in the whole world. Not just for independent, that's a Hollywood main, you know, you're competing against the $20, $30, $40, $100 million films with our documentary. Well, good, good. Let's go up there to Toronto and show them what some independent films can do on Knocking on the Devil's Door, Deadly Nucleus, and Death by Medicine. Thank you. I appreciate that. Elizabeth, we were going to go to our guest moment, but I wanted you to have a talk about one of the...
Yes, hello.
Letters you've gotten?
Yes, I just want to say that we get thousands of emails every day, and this is just a typical one because people are frustrated with the mainstream media or the media on the left or the right, and the average American has had no choice but to rely on this news. But now that they've found Progressive Radio Network and this show, they have a choice. So this is just an example. A man is from, his name is Bill. He says, I so enjoy listening to your program throughout the week, especially the Gary Knoll night. I've come to think, Gary Knoll show rather, I've come to think of him as the ultimate authority on truth. I find myself in having no trust for any news or journalist outlet, rather, that they're just, it's just non-existent, his trust for them. He just wants to say thank you to you. In the year of the dragon, in the spirit of revealing truth, he thanks you.
That's nice. Yeah. Thank you. Let's say hello to John from New York City. Hi, John. Just a moment. Make it quick because you're on. We're going to go to our guest. But you called in?
Yes, Gary. Thank you very much. Thank you for what you do. Listen, my big concern here is that you're enlightening us with problems day after day, and this is great. But I hate to think of what is it going to be like, or what can it be like if you're not there for whatever reason. You're our sort of shaman, and you give us a voice. But if you're not there, for example, if something with the vaccines, it becomes endemic, well, we have to accept them. What kind of antidote is there against them?
I can take the first part of your question. I'm not going anywhere, all right? I'm going to be here. There are many of us. We're working together. There's no longer just individual voices. I've had long talks with Ralph Nader. Nader's now talking with Ron Paul. Ron Paul and Ralph Nader are talking with Rocky Anderson. They're all talking, Dr. Stein. Hundreds of individuals who have important points, not all, but important points to share, at least are communicating with each other. So you don't have 41% of the American population who are independent and none of them work together. Hence, they stay without any power to make any change. Look in the near future for far more cooperation on individual issues, even though they can disagree voraciously on other issues. And that's healthy for a democracy. But you don't just simply dismiss 12 million young people who are out there helping on some anti-war issues for Ron Paul as being nut jobs and loons because they believe in Ron Paul. That is self-defeating. And look for what you can. If you could swing those 12 million people over to supporting single-payer health insurance, if you could get them to support any of the other important social issues, you form some coalitions, and that's what we're doing. So it's not just one or two or three or ten voices. There are hundreds of thousands, even tens of millions of people now looking at the truth and wanting to make change. Thank you. Professor Fred Wilcox is my guest. He is from Ithaca College. For his entire adult life, he's been writing and teaching about war and nonviolence and on the importance of our health care instead of bombs and chemicals and cleaning up the environment rather than polluting it and peace rather than war. And he's co-written books with peace activist Philip Berrigan on protest in the American Empire. Fred's two books on the legacy of Agent Orange, being called the Silent Spring of Vietnam, have earned him numerous awards, including most notable the book of the American Library Association. Waiting for an Army to Die, The Tragedy of Agent Orange, has recently been released in his second, Scorched Earth, Legacies of Chemical Warfare in Vietnam, with a foreword from Noam Chomsky, is the first chronicle of the effects of this deadly toxin on the Vietnamese population, its effects on 5 million acres, the U.S. spread. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Let's take a look, for this audience's sake, at Dow Chemical, one of the makers of Agent Orange, along with Monsanto. Both of these corporations have a great deal of power and influence in Washington through their lobbying efforts. And they've applied for approval of 2,4-dioxin-ready corn seeds. The public comment period ends February 27th, and then USDA will almost absolutely guarantee approval. And 2,4-dioxin is already the most widely used herbicide in the world and the third most common one in North America. Already 70% of all corn in the United States is genetically modified, Roundup Ready. So take us on a little educated tour here about Agent Orange and the two main components, both dioxins, one being 2,4-D, and tell us about why you're concerned, the other is TCDD, and why you believe that the American public should know about what's going to be happening to the quality of their food and the dangers that might present them.
Sure. Well, Agent Orange, the herbicide, the primary herbicide that was used to defoliate the jungles and the mangrove forest in Vietnam, was a combination of 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T, two commercially available herbicides. The problem with those herbicides is that both of them contained a dioxin, and one, 2,4-5-T, contained TCDD dioxin, which is one of the most deadly chemicals known to science. And so no one should ever be exposed to dioxin, any kind of dioxin. There are 75 compounds, but dioxin is a carcinogen. It's possibly a mutagen. It destroys the immune systems of animals and human beings. If one goes to Vietnam, you'll see the effects of dioxin, Agent Orange, on human beings there, particularly the children that are born with missing arms and missing legs and big heads and blind and all sorts of other deformities. So the idea that Monsanto or Dow wants to use some sort of a product here like 2,4-D, because they have created these superweeds, and so now they have to kill the superweeds using 2,4-D. Well, we have a cancer epidemic in this country. We just have millions of people dying of cancer, and particularly the children are dying from all sorts of types of cancer. So we do not need 2,4-D in our food. We do not need it on our land. We don't need it in our water. It's a dangerous substance. And as far as I'm concerned, what the chemical companies are saying to the American people and to the people of the world, well, we have a right to kill you. In the name of profit, we will. We killed the Vietnamese, millions of them.
And we've never compensated them. We destroyed the health of tens of thousands of U.S. veterans, Korean veterans, Australian veterans. We've never compensated them. We've never helped them. We've never offered to help them. And so now we're going to continue. We've already done it, but we're going to continue to poison the United States, our air, our water, and our food supply. Why? Well, because we can. Because the Congress allows us to do that. The FDA allows us to do that, and the EPA allows us to do that. So we'll do it. We've already done it, and we're going to continue to do it.
What do you believe could be some of the side effects of the foods that a person would consume that have this dioxin compound in it?
Well, the most clearly, the most obvious side effect will be cancer. There are various types of cancer related to dioxin, but the World Health Organization and many other scientific groups and organizations have labeled, have concluded that dioxin is a carcinogen. So as I believe that putting more 2,4-D into our environment is simply going to escalate the cancer epidemic in this country. And one of the things that really concerns me is the children. Not that I'm not concerned about adults, of course I am. But why is it that we expose our children or anyone's children anywhere on earth to chemicals like dioxin? What have the children done to deserve this? You know, you see these little kids are dying of leukemia, brain tumors, and all sorts of other things, which scientists again have related to pesticides and herbicides. We don't need any more evidence. We have the evidence. We have the studies to demonstrate that human beings should not be exposed to certain kinds of herbicides and pesticides. And one of those would be 2,4-D. So this is just outrageous. It's total madness. And it is really a license to kill. That's exactly what it is. It's a license to poison our environment and poison our children, our friends, our relatives, our neighbors, and ourselves. And someone should look at that in the government and say, no, I hope there are people in the United States government who have the courage to stand up to Dow and Monsanto. They're multinational, mighty corporations. They have millions of dollars to buy people off. And I'm sure it's quite difficult to say no to them, but somebody needs to say no to them.
Well, unfortunately, that hasn't happened, and it's not going to happen, I don't believe, because the consequences of speaking out in this administration, or the last administration, is that you're now put on a terrorist watch list. I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but under Freedom of Information Act, some environmental groups, especially those that were interested in an animal rights group, found out that they were all on a terrorist watch list by the FBI because they had gone onto a factory farm and exposed the fact that the animals are being inhumanely treated. For exposing corporate America's crimes, these, I consider them very heroic activists, are now terrorists in the eyes of the FBI. And no one, the media didn't seem to care about that. No one seemed on in either the corporate left or the corporate right to consider that a bad thing. I do. And then you have Monsanto. Now, Monsanto has a very bad reputation if you look at its whole history and the lawsuits. And we have every lawsuit it's ever lost. We have we have everything they've ever done, because sooner or later I'm going to find a way that I can debate Monsanto publicly. I want to expose them. So they've repeatedly been engaged in bad practices. Tell us about Monsanto regarding its genetically modified crop agenda to dominate the new green revolution. That the original green revolution was a fraud, but they're just perpetuating it. It's because the American media never challenges the official press releases or the official science that they give us. Your thoughts, please.
Well, first of all, let me say, I think we're living in a climate of fear. The United States, we keep talking about democracy. We're very concerned about who will be the next president or who will remain in the White House. But we're living in a climate of fear, and you're quite right. People who stand up, speak truth to power, are followed, or their phones might be tapped, or who knows what. That's amazing. We have something called the First Amendment in this country, and with our rhetoric endlessly about democracy, I'm saying let's practice it. Let's start practicing democracy. Anyway, about Monsanto. Monsanto made the dirtiest form of Agent Orange. That is, that their Agent Orange contained higher levels of dioxin than some of the other corporations that made Agent Orange. They sold this to the United States government knowing full well that Agent Orange contained dioxin and that dioxin was deadly to human beings. They knew this. But They went ahead and sold it. They claim that they told the government about it. I don't believe that that's the case at all. Monsanto is a criminal organization. Some people might find that an extreme statement, but I would encourage your listeners or anybody else, look into their record. Look into what they did in Vietnam. Look into these modified seeds. Look into
Alabama.
What they do now. Alabama, yes. They have really created havoc in many parts of the world. They've poisoned people in many parts of the world. I don't really understand how they can, meaning Monsanto, can justify it. I really don't know how they can live with their conscience if they have a conscience.
Profits.
Money, profits, of course. And that's the answer when they say that they were just serving the country when they sold Agent Orange to the government. They were just government contractors. They were trying to do their duty. They were trying to help end the war. Okay, fine. But now the war is long over, and people are suffering and dying as a result of a product that they manufactured and that they knew contained dioxin, and they knew dioxin is deadly to human beings. And so why not now just admit what they did and try to compensate the Vietnamese veteran, victims and our own veterans? But they won't. They are not going to.
Professor Fred Wilcox. Professor Wilcox, I'm going to ask you to stay on the line for all of you who are just listening to part of the program, where we'll be continuing on the Internet segment with Professor Wilcox. Our other guest finally called back, but we ask him to call tomorrow, so we won't have a short interview. We'll have an extensive interview on 8.2 million American jobs being outsourced, not out of the country, but being outsourced to incoming visa, high-educated but very inexpensive students and graduates of major universities in India and other countries, 8.2 million. No one's talking about this. We are going to talk about it because we want to make it an issue for both this administration and for both the Democrats and Republicans to tell the American public about the corporations they receive money from that then and the lobbyists called upon, and then all the different corporations that are importing jobs and taking away American graduates' jobs, their potential, and people who've been in a position a long time and taking away those jobs. It's a very bad situation. We're going to do that tomorrow. But we'll be now continuing with Professor Wilcox over the Internet. Professor Wilcox, two more areas I'd like you to explore, please. One is that one of the crucial, more scary aspects of Agent Orange exposure is its persistence in the body and the environment. And since the war in Vietnam, already a third generation of Vietnamese children are being born, and they too are showing deformities and illnesses similar to the first generation physically exposed during the war. What are we now seeing in this generation of Vietnamese children? And since in this country, use of dioxin in agriculture ultimately led to contamination of our rivers and lakes and streams and eventually into our daily water supply, what is the main warning you want to give Americans from the lesson of Vietnam?
Well, first of all, dioxin does linger in the soil and the water and the food supply. In Vietnam, for example, around Da Nang and Benoit bases like that, scientists are still finding high levels of dioxin 35 years after the last spray mission. They're still finding dioxin in the blood, in the fatty tissues of people living near those bases. So dioxin is really has a long life. It doesn't just go away. It doesn't break down in sunlight. It doesn't disappear over time. And that's very frightening. It's frightening to the Vietnamese. One of the things they're most concerned about is just what you just mentioned, is when will this end? How many generations are going to be born with birth defects? This is the thing that concerns them the most and really frightens the most, and of course it is frightening, particularly if you go there and you see these children, which I would strongly urge Dow Chemical and Monsanto and others who deny that that there's any correlation between dioxin, Agent Orange, and human suffering and human illness. I would encourage them to go there. They haven't gone there. They haven't talked to the Vietnamese. They haven't done studies of the Vietnamese people. So if you go to Vietnam or if you read my book, Scorched Earth, I think anyone who does that will be alarmed, will be frightened and disturbed, and will say, we must clean up our environment. We must not pollute our rivers and any more than we already have. We must not feed dioxin-contaminated corn or other type of products to our children. And we must do something about this cancer epidemic. And we can. But what we have to do, and this might sound extreme to some people, is really declare war on these companies that have declared war on us, because they have. We need to stand up to them. We need to picket them. We need to boycott them. We need to call them and write them and tell them that we know what they've done in Vietnam and what they've done to our own environment, and tell them they have to stop.
Good information. Professor Fred Wilcox, thank you for a lifetime of work, giving us some very important insights, waiting for an army to die, the tragedy of Agent Orange, as well as Scorched Earth, Legacies of Chemical Warfare in Vietnam. Fred Wilcox is a professor at Ithaca College, New York. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for listening. We look forward to sharing more on the next program. Now, stay tuned for Mike Fedier's new show on Occupied Territory.